Pope Leo XIV has issued his first apostolic exhortation entitled Dilexit Te. The document was in its original planning stages under Pope Francis, who had a special care for the poor and underprivileged. Leo took it over as his own after Pope Francis's death, and his own pastoral experience as a missionary in Peru, facing incredible poverty and injustice, informed this beautiful meditation on the role of the poor in the life of the Church. The Holy Father's love for the Church Fathers and his own patristic scholarship is also very much embedded in the text and is very carefully and beautifully written. I have to say, though, I have been rather surprised by a lot of reaction coming to it from social media. Now, you all know that I avoid anything purely political like the plague, but we all know that there are times when Catholic teaching on faith and morals ends up having political significance. Human rights and the progress of peoples are not irrelevant to faith. The entire story of Exodus, of the migration of the children of Israel from the slavery and bondage of Egypt to the Promised Land, is a story of God's providential design to liberate them from injustice and oppression. Now, of course, not all church teaching is the same. As we've seen before, there are levels to authority, and there's a whole realm of prudential matters, often involving the intersection of faith and politics, in which Catholics can disagree, even with each other. In the American Republic, so much political discourse revolves around what the role of the state should be in the security of its citizens, and exactly how the poor and underprivileged should be cared for. Those who want to silence the church's public moral witness and shut the church up in the sacristy to marginalize that voice are not just the enemies of Christ. Sometimes they come even from members of the church who believe that their political opinions outrank even the teaching of the Lord Jesus. It's also true that we've seen political activism from some of our hierarchy that has crossed the line and seems to favor one side or another. And that messiness has caused a crisis of confidence of leadership in the church. Combine that with language that's theologically fuzzy and imprecise in a world that can only handle sound bites the size of a TikTok reel, and you got angry apostasy and salty schism going on. It's a mess. And I really just want Jesus to come on back anytime now and save us from ourselves, right? More often than not, the teaching of the church is such that it does not fit nicely in any political program. And it's not always clear-cut how to form the conscience in such a way as to apply it to human life. And it's in this in-between space that the church's teaching on the poor and the sanctity of human life gets caught in webs of messiness that not even Solomon in all his wisdom could resolve. Injustice, discrimination, and poverty are issues that involve real people with real problems. The church has, in her history, very clearly condemned certain approaches to them as dead ends. Communism, socialism, fascism, and ethno-nationalism all have been on the receiving end of anathemas for good reason. And faithfulness to the teaching of Christ has produced martyrs who have shed their blood for truth. It's easy to read everything and everyone through our own political lens. And when we do that, we can miss the real value of the teaching of Jesus. That is why Christians must let the Word of God and the Magisterium form our approach to everything. And divinely revealed truths often challenge and confront us in ways that we don't want to be challenged and confronted. And the continuing call to conversion means that we have to learn to think independently of the categories that straitjacket us into seeing earthly solutions for spiritual problems. The readings at Mass today speak quite clearly about the poor. Though not unduly partial to the weak, yet he hears the cry of the oppressed. The prayer of the lowly reaches the clouds. It does not rest until it reaches its goal. The Lord hears the cry of the poor. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. Pope Leo's exhortation is something that I think you should read, not in excerpts from the media, but in its entirety. He is very careful to navigate away from the Scylla and Charybdis of so-called woke leftism on the one hand, and notions that the Antifa movement claim to be fighting against on the other. Love for the poor, then, is one with love for the Lord. The corporal and spiritual works of mercy in the gospel of compassion, seen through the model of Jesus, are not optional talking points and discussions. They're at the heart of the gospel. Doctrinal, liturgical, and spiritual debates in the church are certainly not unimportant. In fact, it is precisely a lack of orthodoxy which leads to deviations that become dangerous. But living contact with the poor makes right belief come alive and be believable. As the Pope writes, this is not a matter of mere human kindness, but a revelation. Contact with those who are lowly and powerless is a fundamental way of encountering the Lord of history. In the poor, he continues to speak to us. He sustains that there are, in fact, many forms of poverty. The poverty of those who lack material means of subsistence. The poverty of those who are socially marginalized and lack the means to give voice to their dignity and abilities. Moral and spiritual poverty, cultural poverty, the poverty of those who find themselves in a condition of personal or social weakness or fragility, the poverty of those who have no rights, no space, no freedom. A few weeks ago, you'll remember, we had the reading of the poor Lazarus who sat at the door of the rich man. In ages past, poor people and wealthier people coexisted in ways in which our increasingly artificial world has rendered almost impossible. Erasure of people means out of sight, out of mind. And when we can no longer appreciate each other's humanity, we get a weird world indeed. Pope Leo writes, in fact, the illusion of happiness derived from a comfortable life pushes many people towards a vision of life centered on the accumulation of wealth and social success at all costs, even at the expense of others. And by taking advantage of unjust social ideals and political economic systems that favor the strongest. Thus, in a world where the poor are increasingly numerous, we paradoxically see the growth of a wealthy elite living in a bubble of comfort and luxury, almost in another world compared to ordinary people. This means that a culture still persists, sometimes well disguised, that discards others without even realizing it and tolerates with indifference that millions of people die of hunger or survive in conditions unfit for human beings. If the Church of Christ is in need of any examination of conscience today, it is this. that the Lord illuminate our hearts as to how we have grown indifferent to human suffering. I'm going to give you two examples, one relatively local and one global. A priest of our diocese who has a very successful school called me last week. A homeless man who was obviously intoxicated stumbled on the property. The school staff quickly identified him and escorted him off campus, and it was clear that nobody was in danger. But the school parents rose up in a mob accusing the school of deliberately endangering the safety of their children and demanding armed security guards at every moment at every inch of the campus so something like this won't happen again. Now, the priest in question is actually pretty well known for his conservative political views, but even he was taken aback at a reaction driven by irrational fear that revealed precisely the indifference and hatred of the poor that Leo is talking about in this exhortation. Now, you know, I'm usually pretty skeptical about blanket assumptions of unseen privilege. But you had a bunch of nouveau riche parents so far removed from the reality of the world that they cannot tell the difference between a man in need of help and a criminal. Where are we going? On to my global example. Today we celebrate the Feast of Our Lady of Palestine, and we are delighted to welcome our members from the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre, who have been appointed by the Pope himself to protect the holy places in the Holy Land, and also to help work for peace and justice in that place which needs it so much, right? Many of them have just been on pilgrimage in Rome for the Jubilee of the Order and have arrived very bleary-eyed after the long flight from Rome. We're very grateful to have you with us. The Middle East is a beautiful place with incredibly rich and diverse cultures. It's also a pressure cooker that has become catastrophically unstable. When you read deeply in history, it is hard not to see the effects of colonialism and imperialism, which, for all their potential benefits, also has produced a constellation of thorny issues that the powers that tried to divide and conquer the peoples of the region abandoned them with. There's enough injustice, discrimination, and oppression all around from seemingly every side. Where that turns into hopelessness, and where religious, ethnic, and political extremism replace any appreciation of a shared humanity, terrorism and genocide take over. I'm going to tell you something from the heart of a father. I have been absolutely disturbed to my very core in ways that I cannot express by even some of my closest friends and colleagues who have been indifferent or even encouraging of terrorism and genocide in response to terrorism and genocide. Pope Leo talks about the blindness and cruelty of those who marginalize the already marginalized. As he writes, Christians too, on a number of occasions, have succumbed to attitudes shaped by secular ideologies or political and economic approaches that lead to gross generalizations and mistaken conclusions. The fact that some dismiss or ridicule charitable works as if they were an obsession on the part of a few and not the burning heart of the church's mission convinces me of the need to go back and reread the gospel, lest we risk replacing it with the wisdom of the world. The poor cannot be neglected if we are to remain within the great current of the church's life that has its source in the gospel and bears fruit in every time and place. If the church is to be faithful to the mission entrusted to her by her founder, I think we need to have a serious rethink about how each one of us as individuals and how our institutions live the gospel. And I encourage you to carefully read and pray over this gift of Dilexitate. And I'll leave the last word to the Vicar of Christ. Christian love breaks down every barrier, brings close those who were distant, unites strangers, and reconciles enemies. It spans chasms that are humanly impossible to bridge, and it penetrates to the most hidden crevices of society. By its very nature, Christian love is prophetic. It works miracles and knows no limits. It makes what was apparently impossible happen. Love is above all a way of looking at life and a way of living it. A church that sets no limits to love, that knows no enemies to fight but only men and women to love, is the church that the world needs today.